Okay, this is the March 22nd meeting of the Kingston Port Board of Commissioners. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition by the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. And if you'd like to be added to an agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to the scheduled meeting and submit your documents and or presentations at the time of your request. Okay, so let's call to order. Stan, is there a flag in here? I don't think there's a flag.
I think it's through that wall.
Face that, that direction.
It's kind of in that general area. Very good.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay. So, do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second, I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So, public comment.
Hi, I'm Mike Chesmore. It's a little late to complain about the horses out of the corral with the gate so open. We had a beautiful grid. Would not have affected the gas dock or any place else, and it was torn out. Are there any notes? Can we go back in history and find out why it was removed? Because it could have been generating revenue for the Port of Kingston, meaning all the taxpayer area, all these years, because I would have used the thing plenty of times.
What was it? What I'm grid? Sorry.
Grid.
A grid?
Yeah, tidal grid.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Can you clarify?
At the time, I didn't know I could jump up and say, leave the grid alone. You know, what are you doing? You're not thinking. You're not using your head.
What's a tidal grid, Mike?
It's, you know, when you go to the marina in Paulsville,
yeah,
as you walk up to the ramp, if you look off to the left and the tide's out, there are these beams that are going out like this. You can bring a vessel in there at high tide, tie it up. You have to remember to tend your lines as the tide goes out, and the boat will sit on the grid, and you can go down and change a through hole campaign. But you can change a through hole, you can put zincs on, you can change a propeller, or if you got a crab line tied up into it and someone tended your vessel in there to tie up, you could untie it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was you used to go take your boat in high tide. There's a grid, or they used to call it a ways, or there'd be a sometimes they had they even had rail. Sometimes just really on the side, they just had it where the boat would lay over, and then you could work on the boat, and then you could go out when the tide came in, put the boat, you turn the boat around, you go back in, and you could do a bunch of work on it.
Yeah. Well, that was taken out in
mid 90s.
That's what I was thinking.
97, maybe. Yeah.
I don't know why they took it out. I mean, I don't know if it was partly.
I was born just a little before that.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I don't know why if that was part of the boat ramp or whatever mitigation or what they did. I don't remember back, honestly. I've read a lot. I tried to read a lot of those documents to see what was what, but.
That happened at the time that they took out the entire boat area.
Boat area.
Yeah, because there was a boat repair area.
Yeah, so it's
the hills.
Mike?
I have two more things.
Okay.
The second thing, when I go to leave the marina at nighttime and the tide is kind of out, it's really hard to see that green channel marker. And late in the afternoon, if you look up there, it disappears in the hillside. And I've asked Coast Guard, well, it's not our job, it's the county's job. I've asked the county. Can't ask Kingston, but I can ask the Kingston Port Commissioners to put a light up there. It can be solar panel operated. We can put little pin sticky things. I was going to go up there and do it, but I got quite loud protests from Ray and a few of the other fellows. And then there's one more thing. Oh, good job, Mike. There's a plaque there for different people that passed on. I'm working with something besides a head injury. I got something else creeping in there. The boat launch was donated to the community by the fellow that owned that property years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's why I kind of hollered when there were sawhorses put up there. And when I asked why we're there during the only 3 days was open that year for king salmon fishing, they said, well, we don't want people with their trailers parking. I said, before the parking was here, we used to take two or three trailers up to somebody's house and park and then drive down here and get into boats and go. We could still do that if you don't want people using the parking space. Mm-hmm. But to close that when it's not something that the county gave to us or the state fisheries built it, except I don't know that they know the history of it, and I have a few people that I know can verify the history, that it was given to the community.
Was that closed last year for a certain reason? There was some event,
something big was going on.
The 100th anniversary, too, a couple years ago.
Oh,
I think it was closed,
years
too.
Ago, that when it was closed.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I'll tell you why that was closed at that time. That was closed because of... they were moving fireworks through the boat ramp.
Oh, and that's what it
closed,
was.
We closed everything within, I think the fire department required like 150 yards or something like that of that, fireworks when they were loading out of the boat launch. But that's the only thing I remember.
Yeah, that was just a small window. Guys out for the Kings go out there on dark 30.
Right. Yeah, so you're asking, I'm not positive then. I have to ask Ray, to be honest.
That's all I can remember.
Yeah, well, we can find out what that was.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, you're welcome.
See if we can.
We do have another public comment period towards the end if you think of something else.
Good to see you.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you. It's good to see you. Sometimes I forget to leave my house. Yeah.
I snatched him out of the lobby.
Okay, thank you. So now we have the consent agenda, and these matters are routine and will be enacted by one motion of the commission with no separate discussion. If discussion is desired, that item may be removed from the consent agenda by a commissioner. And what we're doing is approving the February 22nd regular meeting minutes. These are all 2023. The February 28th work session meeting minutes, the March 7th work session meeting minutes. That's too many meeting minutes to say all at one time. The March 14th work session meeting minutes, and the February, and then approve the February 2023 warrants and EFT payments. Is there a motion to adopt the consent agenda?
I move that we adopt the consent agenda as described.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. And then we have some action items. First to... go way back. Approve all of the resolution number 2023... 03-2201 to rescind the resolution 2022-06-2201 and update the Visa accounts. Greg, do you want to describe this to us?
Sure. So staff is asking commission to approve transitioning credit cards to Umpqua Bank after the merger with Columbia. Nothing's really changing regarding limits or staff members. It's just migrating into a different bank. And Umpqua seems to have a much stronger online presence, and it makes it easier for staff to reconcile all the transactions. That's the primary motivation.
Okay, any questions?
No, I'll make a move to approve resolution 2023 2022-03-2201 and rescind resolution 2022-06-2201.
I'll second that.
Any discussion?
No. It's pretty straightforward.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, and then we want to...
There's a lot of pages.
I think it's on 16.
It's right after that, but it's on the back page. It's this way. It's where that signatures were.
Oh, okay.
It's on the back page of it. Is it here?
Are they out of order?
I don't see appendix.
That's one more over there.
Here.
There's on and on. Here.
It has the old data in there for reference.
Oh, there you go. Good job, Laura.
So this is resolution 2023-02-2201. Adopting port policies, procedures.
Wait a minute, did I give you the wrong one?
This is okay. Good. And implementing rules in compliance with the provisions and requirements of the State Environmental Policy Act, RCW 4321C. Greg, do you want to describe this?
Sure. So under the most current resolution, the port includes an appeal process for challenging the CEQA determination by the port. Staff is recommending the commission to approve the resolution amending the process for CEQA determinations and eliminating this appeal process as just an additional step. Commissioner Peacock, did you want to discuss, or does overall commissioners, do you want more detail? Just want to discuss this.
I could just real briefly kind of describe what the change would do in relation to the commission. And I think it's important to describe that CEPA appeals themselves, whether they're programmatic or they're actually project related. An appeal of a CEPA decision that the commission would issue, currently that appeal would be heard in front of the commission, and it just doesn't pencil out that that's, you know, really proper. When a mechanism, for instance, in Kitsap County or all the other cities in Kitsap County, they use CEPA in relation to their potential appeal to Superior Court, and that is right and proper to do it that way. And having this system and cleaning this up, I think, just makes it way easier. You know, how do we hear an appeal of something that we're positing, if you will? So it just makes sense here in this situation that any of our CEPA decisions, you know, either programmatically based, which would be, I provide an example of a programmatic decision, which is more of a policy issue related to CEPA. And so it's important that we understand that any CEPA appeal, it doesn't make sense for it to come back to us if we're issuing. So
right.
This is really cleaning it up nicely, and it's also helping to make this so similar to other agencies that are also, you know, CEPA officials in themselves.
It also expedites the process for the party if let's say they don't agree with the CEPA determination. Instead of going right back to the people that issued it, right, well, I don't agree with this, well, we issued it, and we obviously stand behind our work. You know, but it also gives them a quicker outcome and a determination versus adding another layer, more delays on any sort of project or anything in terms of making a CEPA determination. So it does expedite the whole thing for everybody. And most of the time, most processes just go directly to Superior Court.
Yeah,
like you said, and that's the standard practice.
It's a standard practice,
So it doesn't necessarily take away any rights from anybody to object.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Correct. And one more additional point to clarify that is that if we did have a project, did that go out or?
Whoa.
Oh.
That was weird.
There we are again.
If we did have a project-related SEPA decision, we would very likely, because if something were to require a permit, that it makes sense to have the agency that is responsible for the permit to be the ones issuing the associated SEPA decision. And the reason that is because they have their own procedure for an appeal. So in instance, a project, like if we were going to redo something that was a SEPA level that required a shoreline permit, that we would totally allow the county to process that because they are doing the SEPA decision and the appeal would be heard before the hearing examiner. So the hearing examiner in the instance of Kitsap County is the county's mechanism for that. And then the associated permit, whatever that is, if it's, say, a shoreline conditional use permit, that goes to hearing anyway. And so you would hear the SEPA appeal first, and then the hearing examiner would issue their findings in relation to both the SEPA appeal and the shoreline conditional use permit. So it's so much more efficient to do it that way. So, yeah.
Good. Any further comments or discussions?
I have one comment. The on the agenda, it's the wrong resolution number.
No, it's actually the right one.
Oh, it's
the
right one?
I created it in February, and we didn't do it, so I haven't updated on the actual resolution.
So the resolution is incorrect?
Correct. The number of it, yes.
So the number on the resolution should read 2023-302-02, correct?
322-02. Because today is the 22nd, correct?
Yeah, okay.
320, oh, so it is incorrect on here, too.
Did I type it wrong?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So it should read, so tell me again what it should read.
It should be 2023-03-22-02.
Okay, yeah, so it is, yeah. Okay.
My apologies.
So it's usually just the date and then.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
22-02.
So we should, you know, yeah.
Correct.
Yes. Okay.
I will update.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good to know.
Okay, so. We have a first, a second. You've had
you want to do
discussion.
No, he's got it. Oh, okay. I'll make a motion to approve resolution 2023-03-2202.
I want to make sure.
Yeah, okay.
That's right. I appreciate it.
I got it down.
That you did. I'll second that motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Good job.
Okay, so we have come to discussion items, and the piece that I suspect is here for discussion item is the changes and updates to the handbook, right?
I provided you each with the handbook.
Yes, thank you.
With tabs to show you where the changes were, with a little outline on the front that says what they were. So it's much easier to find and understand. Most of them you've already approved.
Right. So this is just basically trying to make sure that the commission gets to review some of the changes. We got more detail on the changes and reviewed it and verified exactly what we wanted. It'll end up being, there'll be another revision to the handbook. It's a living document, but the commission had already approved a couple of the changes, which had to do with sick leave accrual rates, and then I lost my place on my computer. But sick leave accrual rates, and also some of the terms for how we compensate, you know, whether you're exempt or non-exempt. Just clarification, because the employee handbook was not very easy to read and understand for some of the staff. So this just basically cleans up a lot of that. And Audra and Chris especially have gone through and updated some of the changes to it. But we want the commission to actually have, you know, take a look at them and actually understand that these, what these changes were. But if you had any questions, and then approve the handbook for this version of it. Hopefully you should be able to see the strikeouts and get to get any real detailed questions.
Right.
This is a great way to submit it to us, because I'm a very visual person.
And then these are the highlights. Yeah. Like on page 8 is the first highlight.
Yeah, such as exempt employees, non-exempt employees. Yeah. That was, what exactly does that mean? Mm-hmm. A lot of, so we will admit that historically we hadn't necessarily classified employees correctly. And as Audra and Stacey and Chris, when we, in preparation for the SAO audit, they went through and kind of went through these things thoroughly in order to make sure that we were in compliance with state law and also then with best practice. And that was so they updated all of those definitions and went through pretty thoroughly. But there's always there's going to be some additional things in the future that we're going to bring to the commission for approval too.
Cool. This is great.
But hopefully it's really clear, because it's important that the actual employees, it's called employee handbook for a reason, they can read it and actually understand it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's important.
Kind of. You know, versus just a legalese or trying to be, I don't want to use a CYA, but you know, legal compliance, but actually the have people actually understand what the handbook says.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a discussion item. Will it come up for a vote in a subsequent meeting?
Yeah, we would seek approval. I guess we would ask for approval for this current version of it.
Sure.
Since we had approval at the beginning of the year, but this is just to be sure that you see exactly what the changes were. You approved the 3 weeks of sick leave accrual rate, but then also some of the definitions, we added those in. So we just wanted, I'd like to have one that's current that we're working off the exact same copy, and the employees know that the commission has reviewed it too, and you're behind these changes too. So, and you can actually see what those changes are.
Is this something we need to vote on, because it's not on as an action item?
It's not on as an action item.
So you have to wait until the next.
Only because I thought we had already approved the substantial changes. The other one was more verbiage.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't know that it necessarily requires an approval, since you've already approved the major changes that would necessarily.
I think we still have to approve it.
Okay.
Because it's the employee handbook.
The document itself, I think, because we've done a revision to this in the past, too.
Right.
Right.
It's been revised.
Yes.
And when it's
almost
revised,
annually,
it gets...
Yes.
Yeah. Then
so is it okay to put it on April's agenda?
Absolutely.
Let's do that.
Okay. Good.
Sounds good. Although I find it great that we're looking at it first.
Yeah.
To get it all in our noggins.
Yeah, and if you have things that sound funny, because we would have gone further with our changes, just because the layout, and there's some repetition a little bit in it, mm-hmm. but we didn't want to take on this big task and make it go too far into the future.
Yeah.
So we thought, okay, let's get those changes you did approve that are fresh in our mind, get it out to the employees, mm-hmm. and then... have a better written policy probably next year. But mm-hmm. the key is that at least it makes sense to you. And if there's something that doesn't look right, please point it out to us before we provide it
right.
to employees.
Oh, right. Yeah.
This will give us an opportunity to actually.
So maybe even like at a work session prior to the next April meeting, we can walk through it. Yeah.
Might be worthwhile.
Yeah.
For us to commit to looking at it and then at our next work session so that staff has a chance to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. This is great.
Yeah.
Great.
Good job.
Thanks.
Any other discussion items?
So
don't seem to be any pieces of paper related. Okay, so let's hear the financial report.
Okay, so the financials for January and February, because last month I did basically the year-end wrap-up. But and because I did that, I just wanted to, the balance sheet, I'm going to be really quick on, we used to not provide this regularly, but I think it is important just to go over a couple of the changes. On the cash and equivalents, we are about $226,000 ahead of where we were a year ago. And we also, one thing that we've worked really hard to do was, as you can see, about the middle of the page.
Can you tell me what page you're on?
This
down
page.
The right corner?
Is there a there should be a
balance sheet for the period ending. I don't have page numbers.
Oh, you printed yours before I added.
Is it 29?
No, I can start.
It's
on page 29.
Because they all
29.
Say the same thing at the top.
Yeah.
At 28,
at the bottom. At the bottom, here's a page. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. It should have assets at the top, and then...
That's 28, page 28. So 28. The balance sheet is a couple pages long.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Okay. And so if you go to the middle of the page on capital assets, this is where we did a lot of the cleanup work to make sure that when we go through and assess all of the assets, we can... better determine how much we will need to replace them or do any maintenance on them. Mm-hmm. And so the approach we took was kind of mirrored our line of business reporting that I know you guys have, or all of you have not seen yet, but we're running it in the background and working with Greg to kind of roll that out. But so you can see that we have the building and structures. One thing we thought was important to separate out was a terminal facility, because mm-hmm. that's kind of different to our port.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see we figured out which assets go to parks versus real estate, which is the real estate that we leased, you know, to tenants,
mm-hmm.
marine boat launch. And then it just goes into construction in progress, the land, machinery and equipment, and just other improvements. The big one was the marina. So it's my next page. I don't know if it's your next page. But we decided to determine how much of our assets really are part of the marina.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this will help us for future discussion, as well as on our cash flow model, to know, okay, how much are we dealing with here? So,
good. This is great.
Yeah. So, and I didn't want to go into too much detail on this. A lot of it is...
So the boat launch is separated, the fuel, guest moorage, and permanent moorage. That's
so
great.
All assets are allocated to a line of business.
And the fishing pier.
Right.
Yeah. So everything has a line. Anything that under general and admin, those are things that would, when we do the line of business, we would have to somehow determine a way to allocate those to the other lines of business. So the basic ones are real estate, parks, parking, the marina, and those are the major ones.
Well, that's the major ones.
Yeah, fuel.
Yeah.
So that's really all I'm going to, if you have any questions, though, as you go through here, please let me know and I can answer them. I didn't want to be too long-winded. I promised Greg I wouldn't be.
I guess.
Oh, yes.
So on like deferred outflow of resources, deferred outflow of pensions.
Mm-hmm.
The actual for February was 284, but for February of 2022, it was 99?
Yes. So that all has to do with, it's called PEFI. It's the state pension plan. And so what they do is there's a whole calculation behind it. It's done at the end of the year for the annual reports that we have to do. And based on the percentage we have of the whole fund, and depending how the funding is, I think if you remember, last year was the first time we actually had a pension asset versus a liability.
Right.
So those will adjust every year. It's a one-time entry that we do at year end, and it will remain that way. So that was something that when compensation went up quite a bit in at the end of the year, remember I explained there was that big variance?
Yeah.
A lot of it was due to the entries we had to do for the pension. it's guided by that calculation. So
that's why the number went up.
Yeah.
And so. Then but there was a change in the reporting. So it's like you need to report your pension on your balance sheet, whereas previously you didn't have to report it as an app, you know, it wasn't reported in that manner. So that's kind of a distinct change, which that's why it was such a significant change.
Okay. Yeah. Another kind of change was the way that leases are recorded in accounting. We have to book them on our balance sheet as deferred inflows. And when each month I don't want to get into too much detail. This is why you told me not to go over it. I'm sorry. but basically, it's an accounting adjustment. We're still getting all the income. The lease income may look like it's less than we've received before, but that's not true. The difference shows the same.
Yeah, right.
So that's an adjustment that we made too, because the.
But that was required as well.
That was a required accounting standard change.
Yeah,
so what is the difference between deferred outflows pensions and deferred outflows asset retirement obligation?
So the asset retirement obligation is our fuel tanks. Those we have to set aside an amount that we say will cost us to take those out of the ground and make it whole. Mm-hmm. And we actually, those fuel tanks, the age on those are actually longer than I think we originally assessed. I think we put them on as 20 years.
Yeah.
And they actually say they'll go out 30 or 40. And we maintain those in the Department of Ecology is all over that every year.
Yep.
Tori does an excellent job of keeping that going.
Mm-hmm.
The environmental liability, which we originally thought was the ARO, is the ones we took out that were in between where the water fountain
is. Mm.
Between us and the ferry.
Yes. Yep. So that's what that is. It's and that will increase based on CPI or some other sort of measurement every year. So this, again, is a one-time account entry.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
But it's good because, you know, what's you should feel good about, we have a balance sheet. The balance sheet now reconciles through SAO and VARs and all the reporting requirements.
Mm-hmm.
The balance sheet now is also aligns with line of business reporting, which will roll out, which they really actually have developed quite a bit. And then all this will go, you know, going forward is like, okay, now you have, that's why you have an audit with no bindings, because they've done all this additional work. And also people for the public, they could look at that, and if they have kind of some background, but you can read it pretty easily, you know. But if they have questions, they can ask, you know, just like you guys are asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and that's a critical component of having a balance sheet and your P&L.
Yeah.
But the rules can be changed outside of our control. And that's why you'll see sometimes, you know, they kind of explain it, but it's hard to track all that and remember it. But they did change a couple of, those are two significant changes, the pension and how you show that on the balance sheet and the leases. Huge change. Even if you can sum up the lease, it's just how you do that. So it's a lot more work, but it is what it is.
Yeah. And then on the P&L, I'll be just really quick with that too. So the total operating revenue was $408,799, resulting in gross profit of $384,592 through February. One thing, which I already mentioned, rental property income of $36,138 shows that variance of $12,703. But again, you'll just find it other in another area on the P&L as income.
Mm-hmm.
Total operating expenses before depreciation totaled $424,351. A couple things to note on that. Professional services. So one thing that's going to be what I'm going to focus on as soon as the annual report is done is our credit card fees. They went up astronomically. We pay about, just so we have three credit card companies for merchant services. Global Systems increase their rates a lot, and that's who we use for our office credit cards. We pay about between $8,000 and $9,000 a month for those.
That's crazy.
And so what's really going to play into this, and it's great to have Chris on board and the work of the two operations folks, is to get our scribble working better, find a better way for our tenants to pay. Right now, it's credit card. Well, we want to do online, maybe pay by phone. There's, you know, we need to get in, get the technology upgraded.
Yeah.
And also use some of our volumes to say, what are these prices are ridiculous. You know, when I talked to them, I said, what is going on? And he said, oh, yeah, we had some increases. You should have received a note in November. And it was this little thing on the bottom of the, you know, tiny.
Sure,
tiny.
Yeah, it's super tiny. Right?
And I go, well, we can't, you know, how do you expect a port, you know, to, and, oh, well, let me transfer you to our rate people. And I thought, so when I talked to other ports, I said, who do you use? And I, more than likely we'll be switching over to Gravity, who handles our parking currently. We could use it for both, and they're much cheaper, and they're... Their fee structure is much better for us. So that's going to be a huge goal for me, because that's an expense that we can hopefully get under. So that's why you see professional services is so high.
Oh, interesting.
So you're talking about doing possibly like an online sort of registration for staying in Marina?
Yeah, so there's all kinds of things we could do. Currently we use DocLaw for registrations, mm-hmm. right? DocLaw is also a full system type thing, like Scribble or Molo or all these other Marina softwares. Mm-hmm. And so when we were going to try to do some research, some that you've all asked for over the years, or Greg has asked for, like, what's our vacancy rate? You know, what, you know, ways to market different people. Scribble is not housing that information, and it's also not allowing us to handle online payments. So we would have to increase our product or go up to the next product with them, which just costs a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So we have to treat it like a conversion. Okay, Scribble offers this. What does Molo offer? So it's kind of forcing our hand into, you know, we need something better. You can't just, unless you're recording everything, writing it down or something, there's no way for them to give us the metrics. Mm-hmm. And we really need to start measuring, you know, what we do. And so that's a fun project we'll be working on together, so along with Rose and Ashley and Stacy. And I think the whole package will increase efficiencies, be a better resource for users, make the user, you know, a better process for them, as well as, you know, just saving time and money, you know. So that's really the things that we want to kind of focus on. And an accounting system. I'm fine with QuickBooks, but it's not the best. But it'll do.
Yeah.
You know, we make it work. So so just to sum it up, we have a net operating loss of about $40,000 prior to depreciation year to date. We have a net operating loss of $127,428 year to date, and net income or net loss of $105,000 year to date. But let me just make this a better saying, your expenses are fixed, your income is not. We're in a seasonal business, so, you know, we would expect to see some losses early on, but once we hit, you know, once the season really kicks into gear, that'll hopefully will show income.
Yeah. So usually Q1, first quarter is always by far the worst. And for whatever reason, I don't know why it's always been this way, is that our business cycles tend to actually follow the actual quarters in the calendar year. January, February, March, you know, demand is the winter and it's kind of bad weather, and you may or may not get guest moorage get filled up because they don't come if it's too rough. They don't want to come and visit, right? They don't want to take their boat out. So we usually have some cyclicality, and then you get in the second quarter, and our biggest quarter is third quarter always. But the second quarter starts to strengthen as boating season opens, right? Mm-hmm. You know? And then the last quarter, we usually do pretty well, but you're going into the holidays and all of that. But what we'll try to do is, you know, this year I think we were down on seasonal moorage. For sure we were. We know we had about half the number of boats, and there was a variety of reasons and for why, you know, that is. Some of them also, we got some of the boats into the guest dock because they were actually on wait lists, and then they get off a wait list ultimately, so then they go into permanent moorage. Mm-hmm. And then some of it is, they just might go somewhere else, and, you know, for less money or whatever. They're more of a boat, they have less services. I think one of the things that did kind of hurt us is the fact that we lost the grocery store. So then they're here, they, you know, it's a lot more work to try to get groceries. Our cars don't get all the way up to Safeway and back.
Well, they can't legally either. Yeah.
Well, there's that, but that didn't stop people from trying. I know. So it, you know, it's and then I think the fuel was down. Well, I know the fuel was down too a little bit. So, but the prices overall for fuel went up so high. Mm-hmm. So for a while there, you know, it was so inexpensive. Fuel was just disproportionately expensive. We knew that.
Yeah,
I mean, fuel shouldn't be that cheap. It's, you look at what goes into it. So it's just these weird global markets and pending on the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I expect, but our parking has been growing. We see it steadily seem to, you know, not the monthly doesn't quite, but the daily has really gone up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So we're not seeing much more monthly. We gain a few and then we lose a few. Just, it seems like we just stay for the month that passes.
Yeah, yeah.
But the daily has definitely gone up. And some people, because I think uncertainty, they, you know, I was talking to Ray about it, because we see him every day. I said, why don't you get a monthly pass? I see him at Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
And they go, no, you know. And they keep doing that, and they pay quite a bit more.
It's just the uncertainty of...
But and then some of them now they're requiring them to come into work for 3 days a week. You know, so these things are all changing, mm-hmm. and that's why you're going to see the parking revenue to strengthen quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, but
So that's all I have. If you have any questions,
this is great. I like this format a lot.
Good. Yeah, it's a little easier to read.
And the page numbers are good, so we can what page do you want?
Yeah, next time I'll make sure I have them. So that
I added them.
Yeah,
I printed hers.
I would have just gone like that.
Okay.
That's good.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll look for updates on your priority projects as we go through.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we don't have to have a motion to accept this. We just thank you very much. Okay. Another opportunity for public comment.
How much did we pay for the Christmas tree last Christmas time?
The tree itself?
Yeah.
Oh, the tree?
Is it
$200.
$200, I
$200.
Think.
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Why pay for a tree? Or?
Yeah, why did we cut the tree down? It was earning $200 a year. We got so much money we can throw $200 to the wind each December.
Well,
it's just a queer question.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
It just kind of nags at me every once in a while.
Yeah, it's part of the...
Christmas in the Cove.
It's kind of just part of the system
you
of what we're doing,
you
know.
Grab something that we don't need anymore
and
get rid of it.
Well, I'll tell you that we are getting those trees from a farm that's probably not going to continue too much longer. So... They're sort
of... You hire me to go out in the woods and...
drag it down.
So I've been to several facilities around the area,
uh-huh.
and a number of them have one area in covered moorage. I don't even know that it'd have to be covered. It's netted in to raise coho.
Oh, net pins?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Why don't we do that? We started it, and it was like a knee-jerk thing, and then it disappeared.
Yep. Was that done here at one point?
Okay, when you guys vote?
Should.
Vote aye. Is that just there, or could the audience be involved in that vote?
No.
I'm not asking for me to vote, because this stuff...
Oh.
is so far over my head,
uh-huh.
and I'm accepting that.
Yeah.
But if the audience was big enough, would they be allowed to vote on these issues? Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because it's the commission action.
That's it?
Yeah, it's a commission action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Yeah, but
thank
you,
Mike.
To hear public comment. So.
I mean, comment is always good.
People scare the public. Do you understand that when I ask someone, what do you think about this going on here? Uh-huh. Oh, that's the port. No, you are the port. No,
right.
I'm not. I just live here in Kingston. You're the port.
That's right.
You have a voice.
You are part of the
people
port.
People don't understand.
They elected
that.
Yeah.
us.
Yeah.
They don't understand.
So when was that fish pen in the marina? Do you remember when? That's one thing that totally escaped me. I never knew that happened.
I have no idea. I do know that there was at one time a pen around the backside of the slough.
Yeah, that's true.
And when they put it in,
it
was like a meeting of the North Kitsap Salmon, whatever.
It was a salmon.
They said, "So what coalition. Do you think?" I said, "It'll never work." They go, "Oh, what do you know?"
Yeah, well, the coho return
it didn't
was
work.
Phenomenal.
Though. And I told them that the mesh on the netting would cloud up with algae and stop the flow of oxygen and disease the fish and kill them.
Yeah.
So it was.
Well, they did discontinue it.
I
probably for that
such
reason.
A good laugh watching these guys 5 gallon bucket brigade around up to Carpenter Creek to feed the resident cutthroat.
They did get some protection for a couple of years, though, as I understand. But
I think it'd probably be a good idea to. I could pick any day of the week. 25 years ago, hit two rivers, and before noon, have caught and released 10 steelhead per river. Per river.
Yeah.
Now I can take 10 trips and maybe hook a steelhead.
Get one. Yeah.
On a season that's been. Anyway, well,
yeah, steelhead have been decimated. They're an endangered species.
And the salmon are being overmanaged.
Yeah.
When they should be managing fish, they're managing the people that buy the licenses and the insurance and the boats and blah 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 blah. You guys are a lot of fun. Thanks for letting me in here.
Appreciate your comments.
Thank you, Mike.
It's good that you come.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I called someone else that used to come down here, and he said, "Oh, anytime I talk to my blood pressure goes." And I said, "Well, don't, just go in there and have fun."
Yeah, right. Totally.
See you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Take care.
Thank you.
He's a great guy.
He always had, Mike always has some really good comments. And back to history ideas, things that I wasn't aware of that net pin.
Yeah,
is that something to do with the tribes? Is that a reason?
Well, a tribe may propose to do something like that, but it's also a potential commercial venture too.
I just thought maybe that's why they stopped doing it was because there was
it could be
the
because
that,
there are permits required to do it, and then with net pens, if you have Atlantic salmon,
they can
release and
but they bought a lot of that. But like the net pens offer a terminal 86, those are coho. So they release 500,000 fry every year. And it's highly successful. And that's really what the Muckleshoots and a bunch of these people are gill netting and actually purseining. That's what they're catching.
Interesting.
And it's very, very high success rate for returning. So you can see significant schools. And then they run up because they come back to the net pen. So they'll return back to where they're.
Yeah.
So that has enough water flow and it's deep enough water. And then they would feed them out of Terminal 91.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the Squamish.
He's a wealth of knowledge from the old
days.
Yeah,
I love that when hear about, because during the audit, we ran across some old documents, and I just love reading about the, seeing the pictures and what used to be and kind of how we came to be. There's a lot of history.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 104 years, 5 years.
Maybe six now.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So could we follow up the net pen conversation with the tribes or the salmon people or even Stillwaters?
Stillwaters is going to
be I think it's more
find out.
Well, yes, we will.
Okay.
Curiosity.
I'm curious. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could have implications. Okay, commissioner reports. Laura is before Steve because L is before L.
Oh, yeah,
okay.
That's good. I like that.
Ladies first.
So I went to the KCAC meeting with Eric Baker was presenting, which was really, really informative. They had a relatively good amount of people in the audience, which I really appreciated. I've heard this presentation a few times now, so it's, you know, but it's good. It's good to hear it. It's good to do it. I also went to the chamber.
After hours?
Luncheon.
Luncheon. Oh, okay.
Wait a minute. Wasn't Eric Baker at that? Who was at KCAC?
I think he was at that.
So I saw him twice.
Okay.
So that's why. Yeah. But it's always good to, you know, go over it. And you get a different perspective every time you hear it. And you get a little bit more information and, you know, different questions that people ask. And
different angles, yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Mm. That's my report.
Thank you. Steve?
Am I next? Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll just go back to my book here and see kind of what I've got going on. Certainly, there's been an awful lot of sub-area plan discussions. I went to that KCAC meeting as well, and you know, we're providing some conceptual ideas, certainly, that maybe is... you know, a little bit surprising to folks, but I've actually received a lot of really positive feedback from this idea of a small overlay over the highway-related properties and things like that. And I think that the procedure to incorporate that in the county's next steps, because this we're not really deciding anything. You know, in this current procedure, we're just deciding what's going to be reviewed in the environmental impact statement. So the entirety of the county's next job is to take a look at those concepts, and then they're going to analyze it, and then they'll come to us now, and they're also going to come to KCAC. We'll try everything we can to get a cohesive, uniform consensus. And we appreciate Mary's involvement in that to help start that process. I think that Eric Baker and the county are also very, I feel they're very positive about how we're going to knit this together and whether or not there's any kind of cohesive solid response between what the port has in mind for economic development and the county. And to me personally, I think that incentives are the way to go forward with this. So that's in a nutshell. Through the transportation subcommittee and the parks, trails, and open space subcommittee, and all of the issues with the Sound to Olympic Trails stuff that's going on too. It's all, to me, it's just been a very interesting month, and more to come. That's my report.
You have to wear your hat. Oh, cuckoo way.
Well, I really try not to. When I'm in a session, you know, I make it very clear there's a difference between County Planner Steve Heacock and County Commissioner, or Park Commissioner Steve Heacock, too. So it's a vast difference.
Yeah.
It can be.
Good job.
Okay.
Thank
That's
you.
It.
It's such an asset to us that you have all of that knowledge.
Yes,
all
is.
That knowledge and all that passion.
And the passion. Totally.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, I was also at the KCAC meeting, and yes, I would verify everything you're saying or agree with it. And that ultimately has led to this meeting next week to involve the folks that worked on the development of policy for the commercial zone, urban village center, and last update, and us primarily this time. By us, I mean the port. That's what the hat I have on. So, I have had very good feedback from people about it, and I think it's going to be I'm hoping it's very useful,
mm-hmm.
very productive.
Yeah.
Other things that I've been working on this week, this month, Kitsap Economic Development Alliance is having its quarterly meeting, I think next week, and the day before that, they're voting on members, and so our membership and me as the representative will be verified at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. And I have introduced a conversation with KEDA and their primary small business person to talk about ways that we can create and nurture a small business support program here in Kingston. That has lots of different aspects and elements, but that conversation is ongoing. later in the month, I'll be going to the Energy Summit that is being sponsored by Kitsap Transit, which I'm really interested in. It is really, when we went to the ferry advisor, the ferry conference, and heard all of that energy, electrification, etc.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to have a big impact on all of us, mm-hmm. and I want to understand as much as I can, primarily from a provider's point of view, and institutional users like Kitsap Transit, what that's all going to look like as far as they can see it now.
Yeah.
Because we're in the pretty early evolution of how that's all going to work.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to that. The other thing I've been working on quite a bit this month is the proposal that's coming out of Rotary to look at a 20-acre, primarily kind of focused on athletics complex.
Yeah.
And with Clint Boxman, who's on behalf of Rotary. And this morning he and I went and met with Mayor Becky Erickson in Paulsbow, because they, in December, and it turns out, of course, it's been in the works for a lot longer than when they actually announced it, are looking at a two-field complex in Paulsbow.
Oh,
and so the question was, how do we partner without it becoming a Paulsbow thing?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how that kind of tends to go. But I think that we have a lot of strength in this community that gets things done and makes things happen,
mm-hmm.
in a way that supports this community. And, of course, this is all being looked at as a North Kitsap facility.
Right.
And what we're talking about is, you know, because Clint came and gave a presentation to us, and I've heard it at least two other times, is will be for North Kitsap, but in fact will be Kingston style. And but Becky Erickson is, they have this thing called the PERC, Paulsbow Recreation Complex, and they have a work group, and they're rolling. And it was a very good conversation. She very much wants to partner. Clint and I talked about the importance of that partnering, not losing what we want from it.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think we can get there. So.
Right. So there isn't any place in Kingston that we could do something like
they're looking at it. There are things being looked at.
They're conducting a site selection
there's
process
numerous.
Right now.
Yeah, there's
but
three strategies.
Doing
yeah.
a two field.
So what kind of field? Like
four baseball diamonds. Two soccer pitches,
mm-hmm.
I think, is the idea. At least two soccer pitches, and then a complex for inside gymnasium related stuff.
Mm-hmm.
At that thing.
It's on the Rotary page.
Yeah,
it's on the
Rotary and I'll bring you a copy of it.
Thank you. Because when my kids were growing up, I know we had the Zone for a while, which was taken over by.
The Zone, yeah.
I can't remember. Gravitech. And then. You know, we were just looking for, we had Pendergast way out there for soccer. It'd be nice to have a facility, kind of like, I know Central Kitsap School District did a pretty big complex there, but that's pretty exciting. The kids need it.
It is needed.
The concept is very much multi-generational, recognizing pickleball.
Pickleball's big.
It's very big.
It's and, making a comeback right now.
Yeah. And zip lines. And, I mean, he's got lots of different ideas about all the things that you could do. But the most, from an economic development point of view, I mean, I think that Rotary's engine is about the kids. But I think the economic development implications, man, we need to find a hotel.
Oh, yes.
You know, and make sure that there's restaurants around because there are going to be zillions of people.
Yeah.
And they come up for a weekend tournament, and where are they going to go?
Yeah.
And I suspect that as this takes hold, it will be very inspiring to a lot of potential business owners.
Yes, it will.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And the idea that it can, it's not in set in stone yet as to what it's going to be, that there's all these other possibilities out here, maybe a pool, maybe a this, maybe a that, maybe, you know, there's just so many different things, the possibilities that they could put in this complex, that it's not set in stone yet. It's just a concept that they're trying to take off with, and I think it's great. It's absolutely great.
And I think the question of where, you know, the land is, that's, well, Clint has a series of steps he's going to go through. The first one is partners, and the second is
20 acres.
That's
identifying a parcel, and he's a couple of individually owned parcels, Arnest property, and the tribes. Mayor Erickson this morning suggested that when there's a new commissioner that might not have history with Arborwood, that we reopen, that we request the county to reopen the miserable lack of set aside for recreation in that whole development.
Oh, right.
We'll see. The whole world is open at this point, and every single person that he's presented to has been enthusiastic. And we're going to go talk to John Rose next week, the 12th, I think. And we've got a whole list.
You and Clint?
Yeah.
Okay.
So. Yeah, that brings in so many people, sports, tournaments.
Really
trying to find hotels to stay in and places to eat and activities for the kids to do in between.
And going to the two casino hotels isn't necessarily a family experience. So I don't think the Blue Water Inn is going to turn into it, but we'll see how it all plays out. And
sometimes those people are also looking for RV parks to stay at.
Yeah,
a lot of people do that. Camp.
You know.
They
travel a lot.
Usually it's
kids,
half
it
and half.
You know, we did that a lot.
We camped too.
Cheaper.
It was.
And we it's kind of like a tailgate deal. We'd all
Your
so much fun.
Your team comes up and you play together. Well, and when I really started thinking about the fact that these are families that are traveling down to Centralia and traveling here just to play, and they're going every weekend.
Every weekend.
And it was hard to find hotels. Even so, that's a good.
It's cool. It's cool.
Very cool. And I think it's really cool that since you were on the original Village Green spearheading, that I think it's really cool that you have dove in feet first. With this too. I think it's really cool.
We're going to make it happen.
Oh, I have no doubt. I mean, look at what we're in right now.
And
exactly.
And I think as a partnership and a steering committee and all of that stuff gets going, we're going to have some serious conversations about what the porch role is. I think there is much to be said. It won't be the MPD that spearheads it, at least not for another decade or so. But I mean, that's just not the business they're in, although if you read the charter, you'd say it was, but mm-hmm. I'm not going there. but I think it turns out Ray has deep background in managing this sort of complex, and he is very excited about it. And, of course, with all the connections he has through people visiting the marina, he's also totally jazzed around fundraising. And really into, and Becky Erickson jumped right into the whole conversation about Arness, either property or mm-hmm. money.
Or both.
Yeah, and because Bill Arness was a good friend of hers.
Mm-hmm. So. And he was quite a proponent for youth sports and things yeah. like that too. Yeah.
He yeah. was. He always Super. Sponsored.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Yep, the Snyder Park and that mm-hmm. type of yeah. thing up there, yeah. the baseball, he was there. Yeah.
And the huge property holdings that they have right now in the estate are just sitting.
Yeah.
And so
right.
coming up with a use that meets all of his, oh, I'm getting a little shivers right now, all of his passions is mm-hmm. feels like a really right thing.
Yeah, yeah. totally.
Yeah.
yeah.
So.
Wow.
That's the, yeah. that's great.
Very cool.
So off it goes. To the extent, I'll keep blabbering about it in meetings.
Good. Please do.
So that was my report. And
love it.
That turns now to staff reports.
Like Audra said, we're working on upgrading, potentially changing our marina software so that we can better utilize the data that's in there for, you know, marketing purposes, looking at opportunities for revenue increase, things we can do that better serves the customers as well as the port. So we'll be looking at a couple other, I'm going to reach out to a couple other ports and a couple other vendors to see if we can get a demo of their product to see mm-hmm. if it's comparable.
Mm-hmm.
Meeting with one of the sales reps from Scribble soon. We should have met yesterday. He's out. So we'll keep you updated on that, what we find there. I think that's the only big project I'm working on right now.
I think that you also have been in the sideline of providing port commissioners with the appropriate tools to get their work done.
Wherever I can do to help, right? aside from that, just, you know, regular day-to-day, we're getting ready to post the two seasonal positions. We've decided that it makes sense to have two separate areas where one's going to be more focused on the landscaping and the other on the marine attendant. So those will go out shortly, so mm-hmm. we'll have some new seasonal help there at the port as the boat nurse season gets all ramped up here soon.
And so, yeah, and that's replaced Greg. You know, he's resigned from
yeah.
the port and
yeah.
he's working part time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but he put in close over 800 hours a year, so almost half time, you know, full half time.
I know he had a fall too.
Yeah.
Is he healed?
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah,
that
he's looking great.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And the young guy.
And then Nick. And then Nick said he's not returning. He's,
yeah.
Oh.
He's living life, doing
he's
what he's going to do.
Yeah, he's doing his thing.
Yeah. So hopefully we can find some good replacements because those guys were really valuable. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Start the search.
What's the hourly rate?
It ranges between like 18 and 20.
Okay.
I think for either position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it possible that whoever we bring in on whichever side might be interested in providing about 3 hours of support to the market set up on Sunday mornings if the rate were the same?
Well, I think that would have to be kind of a separate deal,
yeah.
unless it's directly to the market. Otherwise, it's like if the port, we do a lot of stuff. Kind of just,
yeah, I know.
get ready, you know what I
yeah,
mean? So,
yeah.
yeah. But I don't think it would be like there would be a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
I think once you figure out who it is, whoever the lead person is at the farmers,
uh-huh.
I mean at the public market,
yeah.
public market,
I know.
Could reach out to them and
yeah.
say, hey, you know, and
yeah.
because we'll know
yeah.
who it is once
yeah.
they come on. So
yep.
I think it might be part of training, because I don't think staff start until 8, so training the group not to have to come at 6.
Yes.
to get all their stuff
set up. You know.
Yeah, and I have
yeah.
detailed outlines from past market managers uh-huh. about here's everything you have to do, diagrams. I was like, thank you very much. I think I knew some of that.
But. Yeah, and didn't we get a really good manager or something last year that helped make it a smoother process for the public market?
Well, that person was, did a good job of setting it up in the morning, making sure they were there in the morning.
Okay.
And this year I'm functioning as the market manager.
Oh, okay.
And I believe that the board of directors president is going to be contacting the port pretty soon to say, please, we need to make sure what, we know what our rates are and go over the lease and that kind of thing. So.
Okay.
And that, just to disclose everything, is Sally Heacock. Interesting combination of last names.
Right.
Yeah.
That's good. I hope we have as many vendors as we had.
We already have.
Oh, really?
Quite a few.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was so popular, especially being on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And that's going to remain.
And then there's one of the new board members is one of the farmers in the area. New people farming.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So it's exciting that they're going to have a dedicated, produce. It's going to be here. That's be truly local.
Oh, my mom will be so happy. She's afraid that she's not going to ever have any fresh anything anymore. She watches all these prepping things.
It's great.
Costco has it all, right?
Right. And she wants to go there every day. Yeah, right. Mom, you can't fit anything else in this house.
So, any other reports? Great, we didn't get you.
Well, I was going to, Ray can't be here, but he, so I talked to him. So I just wanted to hit a couple high points with him with some stuff he's working on, too. So they're pressure washing, cleaning the docks. They're getting ready and starting their landscaping priorities. You know, look at the weather. It's going to get you going on landscaping and working outside. Though tomorrow it's going to change. They're just have a few registration documents that they need to finish up for the vessels to have 100% compliance.
Oh, good.
And they just finished up the rate analysis. I just got in an email this morning, so I haven't really got to take a look at it, but that will be all the data that will then, we'll look at last year, so all the rates for this year that they set last year. Mm-hmm. So then we'll get that ready for you guys to absorb. And they had the Queen City Yacht Club that just came in, and they had a great time. And I got a really nice email from one of the members about Ray and the staff. As always, every time there's a yacht club event, I think I get an email. And I think I asked Ray, said we have about 44 clubs actually this year, so far booked, which is fantastic, because that's like pretty close to twice what we had, I think, 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We have many more coming in starting this weekend. And then 10 park use events are starting to increase for the inquiries, so that's a good thing. And of course, we'll coordinate with the public market. And still working on with the county on a permit for the upper park. So, but it feels like we're getting closer. And the tent permit is in as well. It's already been submitted.
Oh yeah.
So that's that was his.
That's the seasonal. I mean, that's the there. Because it's a membrane structure, it's only can be up for 6 months at a time.
Yeah.
And then just for my report, the Chamber of Commerce, I said, okay, I'll report out. So the Chamber is organizing the Concert from the Cove series. They have all the concerts, I believe, set up, and I think they're going to do 8 this year. They don't have all the sponsors aligned, and I said, okay, we'll help you with the sponsors to get those lined up. And they're also organizing the Wine and Brew Fest is for July 15th from 1 to 7. And I think that will be,
That's the Wine and Brew Fest?
The Wine and Brew Fest, yeah. And that's been really successful. And I would say that the Chamber, is in the best shape since I've been here. I don't have a lot, I'm only 4 years, but... they're definitely keeping improving and doing better.
Which is a
and I know that we've grown the membership to well over 100 members, mm-hmm. paying members,
mm-hmm.
which is great. But, we hope to keep going in that direction. And you know, it might be something where one of the, you know, we might end up saying, hey, maybe one of the other staff members will just think about it, could also be on the board in the future, and I can, and I'll move and give somebody else a shot at it, or I can stay on the board. You know, it's, I think it's been really great. I think the board's working really super well together, and Kylie Roast, she's just doing a really, really good job. She's got a lot of new energy, and she's super organized, and keeps taking on a lot of different things, but doing a great job. And Shanna Rodriguez is the, she's the president, and she deserves some recognition, just doing such a good job. With regard to commercial development, we are we're evaluating utilities and infrastructure requirements to develop the Washington Boulevard site. We met with the county and contractors, including our architect, Winslow and Associates, to keep the project moving forward. They are working, you know, they were out of commission for, you know, for quite a while, so we are behind schedule on trying to get the deliverables, but yet they're moving it forward, and they're definitely focused on this whole effort, including the restroom design. So we're troubleshooting the restroom design, but it's just it's just more difficult in this world. So, and that goes into, especially with some of the permitting and just navigating all these things. But we issued a couple of contracts, which the commission had approved some of this earlier. So we have Norm Olson and Associates as our civil engineer, and then AES is going to finish up. They're the surveyor, and they've been around forever with Steve Otmar and Gary Chapman.
It's fantastic surveyor.
Yeah. So they're going to finish up. So it'll be nice because we'll have a complete survey from the Toth Hill properties all the way down through all of our properties. Yeah. So it'll be a real survey.
Comprehensive.
Yeah. Awesome. And then some of the stuff that Mark has been working on too, we got them whatever information that we've already collated over the past few years and help expedite that. And then Mark, and I really want to thank Mark. You know, I mean, it's very difficult. We got this RCO grant money. Substantial amount of money, and I thought these were slam dunk projects, to be honest with you. It's just anything but Mark's been working with us, and so on executing on the RCO grants for temporary guest moorage floats, we've run into some challenges regarding permitting, and we're going to work our way through the federal permitting process, which involves Army Corps of Engineers, National Marine Fisheries Service, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And we're having ongoing discussions with RCO because the things have changed from not even a year ago.
Yeah.
Especially with the National Marine Fisheries Service and what they want for mitigation, how they calculate it's a totally different world.
Yeah.
So Mark and I, we met with RCO. We have another meeting or two coming up. We're kind of the canary in the coal mine is how they kind of refer to it, because we're the first ones really bringing this to them. And I really want to thank Mark because he put together a really concise, empirical example of what using the calculator, what that translates into, mm-hmm. what that really means. So to give you an idea of how scary it is, this table right here, let's say we're this wide and we're about 20 feet long, so it's as big as a big Suburban or a truck.
Yeah.
6 feet wide, a little less than wide than a truck. You know, we figured it'd be $10,000 per float. That's what we came up with the calculator, and it would be like a 50-year design. We felt this was going to be a really long-term design. It would improve the environment. Everything about it is positive, but it's going to be like 3 to 4 times that cost because of the mitigation.
Is this the, I want to say Port Townsend, but
Port Friday Harbor.
Port of Friday Harbor.
It's their design, yeah.
Okay.
So, and you guys approved that interlocal? No, it wasn't. It was $10,000 when we talked to them. So this was going to be a really great product that was going to have a super long life.
Yeah, yeah.
That would
yeah.
improve the environment.
Yep.
I thought this was going to be one of the best things. It would be a new standard for public marinas, I thought. But we ran into a little bit of a buzzsaw when we went through this permitting. And so the Army Corps, they did give us feedback back and saying, I think you're going to have to go through a nationwide process, a nationwide permitting process. So anyway, we're going to work through that, but we're not giving up. And we had a really good discussion with RCO, I have to say. I think they're really wrapping their mind around it, mm-hmm. and what are the ramifications. So commercial development, floats.
Before you go there.
Yes.
how many floats are we talking about?
So we originally were looking at probably doing around 10 to 15 floats, we thought. We didn't know what we could afford. Then we worked with Friday Harbor. So mm-hmm. we got private sector estimates, right? So we said, that's really expensive. So then we said, okay, we got to come up maybe with a different option. So then we see Friday Harbor, we see what they're doing. That's where we went through go through a different contracting, situation with another public agency. So you guys passed that interlocal agreement between us and Port of Friday Harbor. Mm-hmm. Then we got an estimate from them. Well, then we could do far more with the money and go a lot further. So that's why we were thinking, okay, we could do like 40 floats. Yeah. So then we submitted this, ran it through this calculator process because Army Corps, so we had initial meetings with WDFW, Washington Park Fish and Wildlife. They were great. Yeah, this is great. You're going to improve everything. We love it. Go ahead. Went to Army Corps. Yeah, this is looking really good. You're just probably going to need maybe even a letter of permission, right? But I think you should do a consult with National Marine Fisheries Service. So then when we did the consult, they had Army Corps, it was Fish and Wildlife, and National Marine Fisheries Service, three federal agencies in a consult for temporary, moorage, floats, which usually doesn't even, history, never got permitted.
And those agencies are not
getting along very well, which is why they all three were in the room together for the consult, I think. This is part of their new protocol, which I think is overkill for 10 to 40 floats, which amounts to not much in a temporary facility, right?
Yeah.
Because we were going to put them out during the peak season, and pull them out of the marina during a downtime, clean them up and store them.
Yep.
So it's just a different, and as the NIMS staffer told us, it's not the good old days.
Yeah.
So
is Friday Harbor having this same problem?
So here's the deal. A lot of people have already submitted permits.
Prior to
this new conservation calculator that came out in July of last year. So if you submitted prior to that,
yeah,
you've already got a determination, usually, and get your permitting. But if anything going forward is now going to have to go through this process. So we're just trying to figure it out because it's almost just completely counterintuitive. Like it just doesn't make sense. I mean, it's so crazy that it's so disproportionate that
it's also a funding mechanism, mm-hmm. I think, too,
yes,
for for other agencies.
Yeah, Puget Sound Partnership.
Puget Sound Partnership to be named.
Yeah.
Look, we can set the port.
So we're working with our trade associations, and there's going to be a whole discussion about this at the American Association of Port Authorities,
yeah,
which is a national firm that's usually for marine terminals. But they're concerned. They're saying they're exempt from this process as marine terminals. So we'll see where this ends up. But it's starting to get everybody's attention in a big way.
I think this is what they were talking about at that last WPPA
yep.
meeting that I
yep.
went
yep.
to,
totally.
And I kind of gave you guys a heads up that they said the permitting process was going to really change and be very expensive, and yeah.
Part of what they're doing is they're determining that you don't really have an existing marina facility. We're going to actually calculate what the impact would be if your marina was not there. So that's how they're facing.
So it's really like it's like a pristine condition.
Yeah.
So what have you done? How
prior
are you going to bring it back
prior
to pristine?
European settlement?
Prior to European settlement.
Holy cow.
So this is going to make
it's
it so.
Like the county stormwater rules are the same too. You need to attenuate your impacts to any neighbor or your particular property by making sure that you keep all your stormwater that leaves your site in a pre-European settlement way. So just like there's big fir trees or whatever on the property.
So
the county that can't put septics off the beach.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's almost just to completely stop everything. It'll bring a halt to, so let's say if you were going to do 10 floats, you'll do a third of them. You'll do
yeah.
3 floats because that's all you can afford because all that money's going to go to environmental mitigation. So the money comes out of the gas tax for boaters and goes over to Puget Sound Partnership is in effect what's happening. So the 27 projects, you know, that we reviewed on the advisory board for RCO, you know, I don't think none of those will, all those will have to, I think, go through this whole process from permitting. Mm-hmm. I think there was only, there was one or two that they'd already got their permits, so they're safe. But the rest of
and, them. And it's also just in water though as well, yeah. Right? So anything above
so
ordinary
impact,
high.
So like the Washington Boulevard project.
No, but anything in water.
So how does this affect Sail Kingston Cove, if at all?
Well, it's a good question. We've got to work through that, too a little bit. But anything that you do in the water, basically, they're saying you can't almost touch anything without going through. In effect, what happens is you might as well go through the programmatic permit process almost, or certainly nationwide, and then include every single thing, and then anything you
think of,
and then you have to go try to get grant money. So RCO only will match up 25% for environmental mitigation.
So will this affect the upcoming class season for them?
It very well could.
You need to get a hold of them quickly.
That's been repaired, you know, so.
And up under, you know,
but it's, yeah.
If they're going to have to significantly change their program this summer, they need to know that now.
Yeah.
Because they're starting.
Well, the existing facility has been upgraded and repaired, so it's
right.
Where they
so
should be good. They can operate for sure.
Okay, so it's
but
good
it's the
for
replacement
this year.
Of
it's
that
just,
and the upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's that.
That's cool.
It's kind of. It's just. I'm surprised that. I'm honestly surprised that there wasn't a much bigger pushback on this and really that people understood. But what happened was when it was developed over at NIMS, there wasn't really much public comment. And I don't think, unless you were really, really immersed in it. So like, you know, Port of Seattle has staff. They were like, so they actually wrote letters, which I looked up and with Port Tacoma and Northwest Seaport Alliance because of the impacts to shipping and what they're trying to do with all the terminals. They said, this is, you know, you're talking.
If I remember right, at the WPPA, they said that when the hearing was going on, mm-hmm. that people didn't get informed until after the hearing
That's
took
correct.
Place.
That's right.
And so they weren't allowed to attend the hearing because they didn't know it was happening.
That's right.
And so, yeah, exactly. So.
But then I don't think even after that, I don't think people really understood until you...
No, they won't understood until understand until they do this. And they were trying in that meeting to really warn us what was going on and how it had happened in a way that really wasn't proper. So there were, if I remember right, there were people that were taking action in regards to how it happened. Because it did not happen in a proper manner.
Yeah, but it's still we're going to have to figure out, like, even if you get into litigation, people sue the...
So is this something that WPPA, legislative committee and...
Pacific Northwest Waterways
was the...
Yeah, so there's AAPA, Pacific Northwest Waterways, and then the WPPA.
So you have reached out to them to... Okay.
Yeah, and I've sent them... our example, to give them a concrete example, we also sent it over to RCO so they could actually absorb it and see what the real life ramifications are of this are.
Yeah. Well, and we joined that Pacific Waterways too.
Yeah.
And that was the group that made that presentation in WPPA that
mm-hmm.
I felt they had the best choice of, or the best chances to make a significant
because they work
stand.
At the federal level.
Yeah.
So WPPA generally they for the most part work at the state level, but they do partner like with the AAPA on some of these other issues. So as you know, a lot of the ports, like we have a marine terminal, we have the state ferry terminal, right? So we have one marine terminal. But we're not members of AAPA. It's not cheap, but it is good to have those. those people that are informed. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, is this what you really wanted to accomplish? Are you just trying to stop everything, or do you really want to see, you know, because there's commerce and these things are. So it used to be there was a net loss or gain for what the status quo is. So the Army Corps, when they built our marina, the Army Corps built it, right? So the Army Corps built our marina. They already mitigated for all these things over the years, so it was already baked into the cake way back when. And so this is a very big, this is a substantial departure from what you have currently, which we would have actually improved it environmentally. We would be improving it, not taking it, making it worse.
Yeah.
So then we were going to pull out some pilings, too, for mitigation. We have some old wood pilings, and we were just going to, let's do as much as we can, right? Let's be responsible stewards. But it's a different world, but we're moving forward.
Yeah.
Right, Mark, do you have any comments? I miss anything?
Hey, Mark.
Hi there.
Hey, Bye. Mark.
Yeah, I think the only comment I have is I really can't even believe this. I mean, I don't believe my own numbers. I can't get anybody to acknowledge those numbers, even though they're right there in the calculator.
Yeah.
So everybody's kind of trying to assess this thing right now and figure out what the next move is. So, but I just can't hardly believe this. The numbers that Greg's talking about are extreme. I think, if I remember, for example, replacement of the sail float out there would cost us, there's about 12, equivalent of 12 of these floats combined in there. And that would be $120,000. The mitigation cost was $500,000. Or no, the mitigation cost was, I got the numbers all screwed up. The mitigation cost was in the, I think, $57,000. And the 12 floats would have been $120,000.
Yeah, right.
And so it's significant.
Part of it is because this is new capacity, right? So it's, but they're just temporary. So it's really a small percentage. But if it's a pre-existing, it's still like if you spend 100, you got to spend 150 to 100 to 200,000. You got almost twice the amount by the time you're done replacing existing. So that's why when, as an example, when I say we don't want to surplus those floats or anything, because, you know, all of a sudden it's no longer, it will no longer be in our bank.
Right.
So that's pre-existing, so that's over the water coverage.
I just pulled up the replace the sail float and add, well, that's replace the sail float with 10 floats, but just to replace the sail float, that's the credits, the cost of mitigation was $145,000,
yeah,
and the cost of the floats would have been $120,000.
Right.
So the total project would be $265,000 for that project.
Double the value, generally.
Yeah, so, sorry I gave you the wrong numbers. I have to look this stuff up. I've got so many scenarios.
but the calculator...
Anyway, yeah, $145,000 of mitigation to replace the sail float with 100% or 100% graded surface, which right now is 0%.
Yes, it's a...
graded.
Definitely an improvement for the environment, you know. So to me, they've created a policy that actually runs counter to what their goals are of improving the environment. This was this actually improves the environment, unless you say my goal is to bring it back to pristine. I want everything to go get pulled out.
Yeah.
Go away.
Yeah, for instance, on the sail floats, the calculator says that we are impacting the environment enough that we owe the environment 163 credits. And then because we're removing a solid surface structure, gee whiz, we're going to get 60 credits back. So the net is we're in the hole 103 credits at $1,400 a credit, or $145,000.
And Puget Sound Partnership determines the cost of the credit. So you don't know what the credits are because it moves. It's up to whatever they value it at.
Yeah.
So, and that's a state agency. So you can kind of see, like, this is a whole new process, a huge departure from how traditionally you did it. And so the Port of Seattle, the Army Corps actually have other people come up with, hey, here's an alternative process which still actually puts a greater burden for mitigation. Great, you want to improve the environment, okay, we're going to make it harder, but not less than like double the cost for mitigation. So
of the actual value of the project.
Yeah, and that's for replacing a like, you know, you've still got to do twice the amount. So,
and that, Steve, your comment there exactly makes me feel that there's something wrong, very, very wrong someplace, and that I don't even believe my own numbers coming out of this thing.
So is the cost of mitigation go to actual actions, or does it go to permits?
It goes into a fund of, and that is held and controlled through Puget Sound Partnership. So you pay them $1,411 for one of those credits that you have to buy to be able to do this project.
And so they determine what they spend the money on.
That's my understanding.
Maybe we
well, say so you can get credits
project
for mitigation on your own, but the big hits are taking out creosote. You got to, like down in Harvard, they got creosote everywhere. Or beach nourishment, but the permitting and cost of beach nourishment's extreme, unless you're going to be dredging. So again, you're going to have to mitigate because you dredge. Beach nourishment's the best thing you can do in that situation.
Yep.
If you get away with the quality of sediments and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, it's just crazy making. More to come on this.
Yeah. More to follow. But we did when we, but just to give you an example why I'm really not comfortable, I mean, we did run through the calculator with the Army Corps of Engineers staffer. We said, hey, we must be, you know, we can't do math, or we don't really understand this. And she goes, oh, no, you do understand it, and you actually are doing this correctly. I know you are walking through this correctly. And so that was really concerning. Mm-hmm. And then RCO was kind of like, whoa, we better look at this. Can you give us the exact, you know, because we kind of administered grants, right? We had this grant program. But this is, you know, we don't do the permitting, and we're not doing these projects. So it's going to be a learning curve for everybody. And then we sent it over to Pacific Northwest Waterways. I talked to WPPA, and I'm going to send the same kind of information to both of them so they can kind of confer. Mm-hmm. And I haven't gone to one of the things is I haven't gone to any of the, you know, let's say put this out in front of the legislators or anything like that. But at some point, it makes more sense to do work through the association, I think. But ultimately, we would have to go to like a Derek Kilmer and these kinds of things do drive legislators pretty crazy because they can see that this is obviously not what they want to see happen.
It will be the destruction of marinas.
Yeah.
Especially small marinas.
Well, and how will they get public, mitigation private, money when nobody's doing any projects?
Exactly. They're because going to halt it because it's too expensive.
They basically dissolve the procedure to actually do a project.
You said the three agencies were Army Corps of Engineers, Department of Fisheries, and what was the third one?
National Fisheries Service and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Natural Fisheries.
Yeah, they're both federal.
National Marine Fisheries.
Yeah, they're both charged with mitigating impacts to threatened and endangered species. So NIMS is primarily orca.
Chinook
and Chum and Steelhead.
What was the third one?
It's U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is actually the component of Steelhead, I think, is right.
Okay.
And then something else. Oh, and probably Cutthroat.
Yeah, well, they have a list, but it's the, this is, I think, it's going to be such a, it's really a big deal. We're still reeling a little bit from, I think about this even when I go to bed, very discouraging. I'm not sure, you know, I usually thought I could navigate things, but I don't know how to navigate this one, and I don't know how long it'll take to do this. And then the problem is, so temporary floats, these are temporary. These are only just deployed for maybe 4 months of the year, maybe 6 months at the most.
Mm-hmm.
So that was never even, it's inside the marina. So it's not even out doing anything. This was dredged, right? So this has already been mitigated for. So that's why it's bizarre to me that there was this kind of, that all of a sudden and they said basically in the meeting, well, we met this morning, we talked about your project. So we decided that this this program was applicable. So I said, well, you just kind of determine policy at a morning meeting as to whether this is a huge departure. This isn't permanent. It's not permanently affixed. There's no other permanent anything going. This is like, you know, so that's why it's really kind of stunning. And then when you see that the mitigation required is like overwhelming. So it will be, and I don't think Recreation RCO, they're going to have to go, wow, are we taking 2/3 of the money or half the money that comes out of these taxes and it's going to go directly over to another state agency?
Yeah.
Why isn't that state agency legislated for fund and being funded for environmental remediation? That's what, you know, instead of saying we're just going to cannibalize, you know. So it's really a tough one. But I think what's going to come out of it is it's going to have to go through the legislature.
I think so too.
Okay. And the legislature. I just a real quick one on the legislature. There's a whole bunch of bills that the derelict vessel program is being reexamined and funded again really well. The WPPA has a really nice legislative report. I think you guys copied on that, don't you?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes when you look in it, they do have one. It's not really affecting us, but they do have, what they did was because the federal government, after the Shipping Act of like 1937 or something like that, they interpreted at one of the federal agencies, certain ports are not eligible to participate in this Shipping Act to be able to meet to talk about issues with cargo. Just came out of the blue. Somebody in charge, they decide, I'm interpreting this is that you don't fall under Kalama, Longview, and other people at marine terminals. So the state is passing, it looks like it's going to pass, their own legislation allowing Washington ports to meet. All these ports would qualify. And when you're dealing with in international, they collude all the time. Many of these companies are actually nationalized companies, like the China company, the Chinese companies. They're actually national government. They sponsor them. They control them. So same with all their fishing companies. They're all through the government. So there's this collusion that goes on. So Americans, we're about competition and capitalism, right? So we're at a huge disadvantage if you can't even go, hey, what's going on here? Because they play us off one another, which is why Seattle and Tacoma, they could see that they were just going down where the ports were the ones losing out.
Yeah.
So that's why they created the Seaport Alliance. So Tom Tanaka, even though he's retired, he's helping, I think, with the legislation a little bit. And that's going to be passing. But it may be that we might have to ask our state legislators to come up and draft a bill and pass it. It won't happen in this session, but come up with something that counteracts the federal agencies say, well, we're not buying into your program. And we're the only ones in the country that are subject to this calculator.
Mm-hmm. Nowhere else.
Right. So these other regions that National Fisheries Service has, and a lot of the people around the country are all wondering, what are you guys doing up in the Pacific Northwest? What is going on up there? You guys are cray-cray. But, you know, so it'll be interesting as to what the solution is, and I think some people smarter than I am, but I just hope it doesn't take forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry to draw that out, the staff report. I wasn't going to go too much.
it's always good to get info.
It would be good to get an update on that at our next meeting as well.
I will update you.
Our next regular meeting is Wednesday, April 26th at 6:30 p.m. It will be a hybrid meeting with the OWL, Zoom, and in person, and it will be at the Village Green Community Center here. And with that, I think we're adjourned. It is 2:45.
Oh, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Oh, excuse me.
I'll second that motion.
Very good.
Okay, thank you very much. So,
I think that's in case we wanted to.